You are listening to the Huddle Up Podcast, part of the USA Today Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corey Bonini, and we're here to talk fantasy football for the 2018 NFL season. Joined today by Ryan Benigni, Senior Director of Fantasy Sports for USA Today Sports Media Group and thehuddle.com. Ryan, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Corey. Excited about week two. Thanks for having me.
Great. Happy to have you. So let's just jump right into some news of note for week two. Right off the top, do you think the Le'Veon Bell situation has changed in any direction one week in, and where do you see this playing out?
Well, as we've talked about before offline, I wouldn't be surprised if Bell never sets foot on the field again for the Steelers. And having Connor play as he did last week, it puts very little pressure on the Steelers to have to cave in to Bell's demands. For Bell, does it add more incentive for him to return? No, he's kind of drawn his line and said, this is what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it. So at this point, they're going to continue to run Connor, and Bell's just going to be there tweeting away.
Now, does that make him trade bait at this point? I think he personally has a realistic shot of being traded, and one team that jumps out to me would be the 49ers. I mean, do you think I'm crazy?
No, they've got a lot of cap room. You know, it's moving some players, especially having McKinnon go down for the year. They didn't have much of a ground game last week. Bell would be a very interesting addition to that offense, and they have the money to pay him. So if they're willing to jockey up and say, hey, let's get to the table and figure something out, it would be in Pittsburgh's best interest to move him, because even if he does return this year, I think it's pretty clear, and he's been pretty adamant, that he's going to chase the money. So anything beyond this year, even if he were to be there, it's very dicey, in my opinion. So I would move him. And if San Francisco looks as logical as anywhere else.
I'm going to put on my GM hat for a second, looking like the Khalil Mack deal, two first rounds, the rest of the haul that went with that, you know, mega deal. Obviously, totally different person, different player. What do you think fetches, you know, Le'Veon Bell? I think it's probably like a first and a fourth, first and a third, maybe. And that might even be a little high.
Probably a first next year, and either a swap of other picks later in the draft or a conditional second or third the following year, depending on what his production is or the team production is with him on board in San Fran.
Sure, I can definitely see working out that way. All right, probably the biggest news then that everybody be concerned about would be Aaron Rodgers' knee. He, you know, admitted that it was a sprain to a degree. We saw him come out of the locker room, play extremely well in the second half on one leg, and, you know, being his left leg, he's had problems with that in the past. Going back to his high school days, he actually tore his ACL in that knee, and he said he's had to compensate for that throughout his entire career in terms of mechanics. I'm not overly concerned just because of how well he played. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, honestly, you're a fool not to be in that situation. You saw him in the second half. He could hardly stand on that leg at various points.
But it didn't matter.
A guy,
it didn't matter. He shredded the Bears, and they made him look silly in the first half. I mean, why should I be overly concerned?
Because he's a player that sets a lot of plays up with his mobility. He's not out there rushing for 50, 60 yards like a Cam Newton, but he moves in the pocket, and he moves very fluid. If he's got a hitch to his step, and he's favoring that leg, and it's in his mind at all times when people are falling down around him, it's going to play a factor. It didn't last week. He got lucky. He got very, very lucky to come back in after halftime after being carted off in the first half and see him just rip Chicago up. And I think at that point, Chicago was a little bit overconfident. But losing some of that mobility, limiting the weight he's putting on it, you have to think he's going to be sporting a bigger brace moving forward. And just the mentality of it's going to play in. At that point, he had nothing to lose. Moving forward, yeah, maybe a little bit more dicey. He's not getting any younger, too.
If you own him, are you trying to trade him?
I don't know that you can.
Well, I mean, you can always trade him.
You always can.
What do you mean you don't know you can? You can trade anybody, right?
You always can. I guess the better way I should have said that would be, you're probably unlikely to get fair market value for what he would have brought you a week ago than what he would bring you now. So you can wiggle it out to those in your league and see what happens. But I don't know that you're going to have as many biters as you would have before.
I think maybe what he did against the Bears in the second half, adding to the lore and the mystique that is Aaron Rodgers, I think that actually may have helped your trade value when you're trying to shop him around your league. I personally would at least put out a feeler and see what you can get in return. So sticking with some overall, you know, NFL news here that I don't really understand it, but Martavis Bryant rejoined the Oakland Raiders while he's reportedly facing a year-long suspension. First of all, what do you think about that? And then after you give your take, what were your overall impressions of John Gruden's return from a fantasy football perspective?
So this one really surprised me. When it came across the wire, I was like, what the hell is Oakland doing? This is a guy that didn't stand out at all during training camp. You've cut him after previously trading a third rounder for him. We all know about the potential suspension problems that are looming. Will they happen? Will they not? Maybe. Time will tell on that. But is this just too quick of a knee-jerk reaction because you couldn't stretch the field with your receivers in week one against a rather talented defense with two great cornerbacks? I don't know. Is it more of a sign of, hey, maybe Cooper isn't going to be able to be the focal point of the passing game? Maybe Jordy Nelson isn't as good as they thought he was when they signed him off the free agent market. This move makes so little sense to me. I'm not going out and buying him at all on the waiver wire this week. I just don't think you can depend on this situation. It feels like it's games coming out of Oakland. As far as first impressions, it was one game against a tough defense. They need to run the football more. Marshawn Lynch needs to see 15 to 20 touches per game. They need to put the football in the hands of the wide receivers more. Again, against different defenses moving forward, that will be a lot easier to do. But when you're running your offense through your running backs and your tight ends and not running the ball well, you're going to fail 9 times out of 10.
You know, I think there's a chance, and maybe I'm way off base here, I think there's a chance that John Gruden and company knows something about the Bryant suspension situation that the rest of the world doesn't yet. Some kind of false reading or something. I'm purely speculating. Who knows? But I just got a strange feeling that it's going to come out at some point in the media that, you know, Bryant isn't suspended. There was some type of error in some way, and he will return to the team and be fine for the whole year.
Yeah, maybe. Time's going to tell on this one. Are you grabbing him on leagues you need a wide receiver?
Maybe. No, I personally didn't like him before any of this stuff happened, so I wasn't really keen, you know, on adding him, you know, after hearing that news, but I still think there's hope for Jordy Nelson and Amari Cooper in the right situation, right matchup, sure, but you know, Jared Cook was the guy who stood out, you know, in that passing game. I'm curious to see if that's going to play out all year long. I think it was probably more of a product of the Rams being so good on the outside that, you know, the only place for Derek Carr to go was down the seam in the middle of the field to Cook and make sure, you know, they could at least move the chains that way. But
Cook does that once a year. I'm sorry, but Cook does that once a year. He just got it out of the way early this time.
Yeah, he has a history of doing that. There's no question about it. Leonard Fournette is another player who fantasy gamers would be interested in knowing about, and his hamstring injury is something of concern to me. He, you know, has a history of soft tissue injuries. He didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. Do you take a shot on him against the Patriots in week two?
If he plays, I think you have to, but I don't think he's going to play at this point. I think TJ Yeldon can give them just enough in that system to play against New England. He's going to catch the ball a little bit better out of the backfield as well. I think that plays better to New England's defense than Fournette does, honestly, in the passing game. So if I'm Jacksonville, the season is young. This is a guy with a history of soft tissue, as you mentioned. For as big and powerful and bruising of a back as this guy is, kind of wimps out every once in a while due to these little types of nagging injuries. I don't want to have to rely the rest of the season wondering, you know, should we have sat him one more week if I'm Jacksonville? The season is young. Let him rest one more week and be ready to go for week three.
I just don't think that's entirely fair. I mean, when you're that big and powerful, you need to have, you know, all of your muscles firing properly and you can't be in pain. And if you have a bum hammy or you have a, you know, strained ankle or something like that, it makes it difficult to be, you know, him at 100%. And I think backs like that, when they're less than 100%, they're far less effective than a, you know, a different style runner could be at less than 100%. So another huge name, Antonio Brown. This might be just making a lot to do of nothing, but, you know, there's this story going around where a reporter was writing a story about him, some unkind things about Brown's personal life. Brown took exception to it, made a threat online, take it for what you will in terms of how serious he was about it, but essentially insinuating he was going to, you know, break the man's jaw for writing negative commentary about him. I don't personally think anything comes of this. I could see in some weird way, maybe Roger Goodell says that's, you know, a boundary we don't cross as NFL players and we will sit you for a game. In all likelihood, I think it's probably just a big fine. Do you have an opinion on how this will probably play out?
I think it'll be handled by the team. He's deleted the tweet or Instagram or whatever social media piece he put it on already. He did an apology. He said he has to be better than that and more mature and not get caught up in the emotions of it at the time. Some things were said about him that apparently were already out there on social media. So he didn't like to see it flagged. Yeah, it's, you know, it's welcome to the world of social media. I don't, that's much to do about nothing.
All right, fair point. I overall mostly agree with that. I don't think it will cost him any game action from, you know, from a fantasy angle there. Well, you've always been keen on Greg Olsen. You know, I respect what the guy's done quietly on his way to the Hall of Fame, if you ask me. But what's your take on what the Panthers are able to do to best replace him right now?
Sewing another foot on him, maybe? This is a bad break, 2 years in a row, literally and figuratively, in the situation. It's tough, but Olsen's starting to break down after a lot of miles over the years. So I think they're going to do two things. I think you're going to see more dump passes to Christian McCaffrey, if that is possible. Sprinkle in a little bit of rookie Ian Thomas at tight end. But I really think DJ Moore, their first-round wide receiver, has to step up. He works great in space. He can make big plays after he gets his hands on the football in space. I think he actually can do more than Olsen can in those intermediate-type routes that Olsen has been running so well for so long. But Moore's really going to have to step up now. It's the pecking order is very clear previously with Olsen. I think it gets a lot less clear with Olsen out.
Yeah, I don't have any real argument with any of that. Chris Manhertz is a tight end. You know, he had a broken foot in the offseason. He's on his way back to being 100%. Could be a factor. He was a low-level college basketball player, so maybe they try to use his skill set around the goal line. To me, Devin Funchess is probably the biggest beneficiary of the injury, the over-the-middle-field work. Still, I don't really want anything to do with him, but if you're in a PPR league or half-point league, maybe, he's worth a slight bump, for the rest of the way. Speaking, more in a more broad sense, we've talked about this, off-air a number of times, but share with the listeners your early lineup decision tactics. We have very little to go on. You can use a lot of last year's data, but how accurate is that in a lot of situations? Not very in most situations, if you ask me. And you have 1 week of statistical data, and some of those performances may be ultimately flukes when it's all said and done. So share your thoughts on that.
Well, you really need 4 to 5 weeks of true gameplay to have a statistical benchmark to start moving forward with in the new season. You can't rely at all on last year's numbers. Anybody that tells you otherwise, I think, is trying to sell you something that isn't very true. It's teams change so much from year to year. So, you drafted a lot of guys high. You're generally going to play those guys more weeks than not, even in tough matchups. You try not to get too cute. The last week in me about a little bit. I really thought Cordarrelle Patterson for New England was going to be a much bigger factor. I played him in some situations. In one situation, I benched Adrian Peterson, who I was confident would have a good game too. I just thought Patterson would have a bigger game. Too cute in that situation. On the flip side, a deeper guy that I was taking at the late rounds, Ryan Grant for Indianapolis. I was confident he too was going to have a good season. PPR leagues, he rewarded me with double-digit points. Again, might have been too cute in that situation because I had other players I drafted higher that were in a little bit better situations. I just liked the matchup. I liked having Andrew Luck back. I thought it was a good matchup for him, who was very unheralded at the time. And now you'll probably see him start to be a flex play more weeks than not moving forward. So, just stick with your guns. Don't be too fancy. Don't be too cute. And don't overthink yourself. That's what we're all too guilty of early in the season.
So I think it's probably fair to apply that same mentality then when you look at, whether or not you sit a stud player with a miserable matchup. Odell Beckham Jr. was a good example of that last week against the Jaguars. And he came out and had, what I would say is a pretty good day for PPR, purposes. I don't know that he's somebody you're ever going to sit in any situation, but, is that a fair assessment? I personally think you just have to roll with your stud player no matter what.
Well, if you have him, you took him at the tail end of the first round or the very start of the second round this year. So are you willing to say that type of caliber player is okay to sit down this week? Now, maybe if you're loaded at wide receiver and you have another player that could easily step into the top three or top four, depending on your league system, maybe. I'm a big believer that these elite players want and try harder to show up in elite matchups. You know, for as much as Jalen Ramsey talked all offseason and wants to show the world how great he is, Beckham equally wants to show the world that he can best Ramsey. And if you're an offensive coordinator worth a darn, you're going to find a way to get the ball in the hands of your biggest playmakers. You're going to move them around. You're going to put them in a position to succeed, even against better than average talent.
Yeah, fair points across the board there. Another interesting situation I've had a few people asking me about is how do I feel after the Lions were completely obliterated by the New York Jets on opening night there, Monday Night Football. Is that something I should be worried about? You know, is the questioning I'm getting, should I be downgrading players like Matthew Stafford and company throughout the rest of the season? And personally, I don't think so. I mean, you know, you get a first-year head coach coming in who has a history of not, you know, showing up early in the season. I mean, look what happened last year with the Patriots. They, you know, got thumped by the Chiefs, and their defense was on a historically terrible pace for, what, the first month of the year, till they finally started getting things rolling. And I think that might be just part of it. They overlooked an upstart Jets team that's better than people want to admit, but the Lions just simply weren't prepared to come out. I'm keeping everybody within, you know, a really close proximity of how I valued them heading into the season, with maybe the lone exception, I think, to that rule is going to be Kerryon Johnson. I just still think Jim Bob Cooter doesn't like to run the football enough to make him matter.
That's entirely possible and very sad if that's the case. What do I think about it? Bad day at the office. I need to send them a bill, though. I was laughing so hard at that game, I threw my back out and had to go see the chiropractor today. So I'm not happy about that. But, you know, it was a really bad day at the office. You know, their play calls and signals are going to be completely different this week. Then again, it is the Lions, so maybe they're going to be like, well, nobody would believe we'd run with the same signals twice in a row. Let's do it and throw everybody off. But no, you can't devalue those guys at this point. It's one game, first game of the year. I think they looked completely past the Jets, as you said. And you're also hearing some rumblings from some of the players that they're not as happy. You know, the former coaching regime was very player-friendly. The new coaching regime is very not. So they feel like they were ran too hard in training camp and they were out of gas and things of that nature. This is all the adjustment process to a disciplinarian-type head coach. And you're going to have some setbacks for long-term gains, and I think Detroit realizes that. I still think Patricia is the right answer for that team long-term. I still think more discipline, a harder-headed coach, and a very much, we're going to do it this way all of the time, is what that team has been missing for many, many years.
Yeah, if I can put my conspiracy theorist hat on for a second, I think there's actually something to this. So Travis Swanson was the Lions center and guard last year and for a number of years, and he went over in the offseason to the New York Jets. He didn't make the final roster, but I have a feeling that he taught that coaching staff a few things about, you know, what to expect from Jim Bob Cooter's play calling and from, you know, the line calls and so forth. So does that amount to anything? I mean, is anything tangible for fantasy? No, absolutely.
Well,
you see that all the time. You sure do.
So I wouldn't put, yeah, that probably happened. And every week, somebody that was cut gets added by the new team, and they get whatever little bit of intel they can and move on. So again, the good teams adjust constantly. There's a reason Detroit hasn't been a good team consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saw that on Hard Knocks with Michael Kendricks and the Browns until he, you know, ended up getting arrested and facing prison time. But, you know, at least you see how that can play out in a real world scenario with the, you know, inside look that you get on a television program like that. So Tampa Bay, interesting situation to me. So DeSean Jackson had the better fantasy day than Chris Godwin. Godwin outsnapped him by 26 offensive plays. Up-and-coming young guy, second-year talent, has the size. He's pretty much everything DeSean Jackson isn't from an on-field perspective. I've thought, you know, he's probably destined to be a pretty good player in the NFL. I don't know that I'm ready to say that with Mike Evans there, you know, that he's going to take over anytime soon. He'll probably have a few flash games here and there. Anything you want there? Do you want, you know, do you want to buy in, get some shares on Chris Godwin?
Not particularly. You know, Godwin was drafted in almost every league I think I took part in. D-Jax, not so much. He also had that injury problem later in that game, so that impacted some of that offensive snap total. All things considered, as you know, I talked a minute ago about Detroit looking past the Jets. Orleans totally looked past Tampa Bay. completely. I think they were already working on their week 2 blueprint. So you're not going to see Fitzpatrick and his magic like that on a weekly basis. You're not going to see 4 passing touchdowns coming out of that offense regularly. Personally, in a best case scenario, both of these guys to me are flex options. I'm not going to worry about getting any stock in either one of them because I think it was a flash in the pan. I just don't think Tampa Bay is that good.
Sticking in Tampa for a second, I'm going to put you on the spot. I mean, I think that as long as Ryan Fitzpatrick wins one of the next 2 games and looks competent doing it, Jameis Winston does not return to a job. Do you think I'm crazy on that one too?
If Fitzpatrick goes 3-0, I think you have to let him continue to start. I've never been that impressed with Winston to begin with. He's shown some flashes, but he's never been able to consistently put it together week after week.
Oh,
but
you know what? There's this.
I was just going to say, there's this cycle of Fitzpatrick. It's, you know, get cut by your team, go to a new team as a backup, take over, show ridiculous flashes, show off the beard, get everybody in love with you, and then suck. And then rinse and repeat that cycle. It happens. Look at his career. It's happened all of the time. Tip my hat to the guy because he's done very well for what he has been in the NFL circles.
Yeah, he's but an I NFL just relief I, pitcher. I mean, he comes in for, gives you 1 or 2 good innings and that's it.
But I'm not going to buy in. I've seen some major free agent budget go towards him this week and it's like, it's good luck. Enjoy it. I don't want any part.
Looking at the Denver backfield, that's something I've also been intrigued by. You know, Philip Lindsay had a lot of praise close to the Denver area. It wasn't the nationally touted name in the offseason. That was Royce Freeman. Fantasy owners flocked to Freeman and bumped him all the way up to, what, the 3rd and 4th round in some drafts. I mean, he was definitely going in the 5th round as the summer was ending and the draft season was ending. You know, he was consistently a 5th round ADP and going higher at times. We see an even share of touches in terms of on the ground. Both had, you know, the same amount of rushing touches and coincidentally the same amount of yardage. But Lindsay had the better fantasy day because he's more of a PPR weapon. Local area guy. I think there's some intrigue, you know, for that. They don't really have anyone else on the roster in the backfield who's a great pass catcher. Freeman's capable, but he's not at all, you know, known for his hands out of the backfield. So I think he was, of all of the players who stood out and became waiver wire darlings of this past cycle here, I think he was by far the guy who had the best long-term outlook and was somebody I was willing to spend up on because I really think, especially in the PPR formats, he's going to be a minimum flex consideration week in and week out.
I'd have voted 20% in the leagues where I have Freeman and even some other leagues where I was weak at running back to try and add Lindsay. I think I got him in 2 out of 5 tries. I'm seeing lots of things on Twitter saying he could be a poor man's Kamara this year. I don't think so. He's 5'8", a buck 90. I'm thinking a lot more Danny Woodhead-ish here. And that still has a flex role in fantasy. I still think and agree with you that he's going to be an opportunity type play moving forward. But again, this is one game. Don't buy in completely. I'm not going to play him this week. I'm going to wait and see what happens. I think this devalues Freeman a little bit. But as you said, you know, he was going 3rd, 4th round in a number of drafts. I invested that in him a couple of times just because I wanted some shares of him this year. But I think now, you know, people were also turning around and drafting Booker after the 12th, 13th round. I think Booker is completely useless in fantasy terms right now. He should be completely removed from rosters.
Yeah, no argument there. I dropped him for Lindsay in a couple of leagues where I had Freeman already, and I don't think there's any regret going to be, you know, popping up down the road from that one. I have to disagree completely when you say, you know, you're probably not going to play Lindsay this week. I mean, against the Raiders, I want everything to do with him in every lineup I have. And, you know, maybe that's a little overzealous. Maybe I'll get burned by it. But, you know, you didn't go out and spend a bunch of your cap or your fab budget on this guy and then turn around and sit him. And chances are, if you did, you know, invest heavily in him, you needed him. You weren't picking him up just to, you know, let him sit idly by and, you know, not get any points out of the situation. So for me, he's in every lineup that I, you know, was able to acquire him.
Your running backs must stink.
In a few leagues, they sure do. I got bit by the Darius Geis and Sony Michel bug a number of times, unfortunately.
So, yeah, right there with you.
Speaking of the injury bug, Atlanta was hit hard. Okay, so Keanu Neal, star strong safety, Deion Jones, an even better linebacker than Neal as a safety. Both of these guys were put on IR from week 1 injuries. I think that's probably the most devastating, you know, pair of injuries that a team could face this early in a season. Really changes how they want to do things. And this is a young, fast, you know, defense that was on the come up, if you ask me. I really like what Marquand Manuel was able to do last year with them as a first-year defensive coordinator. Had high hopes. So now, does this change anything for you when you're looking at how other teams, maybe lesser quality teams, start playing, you know, Atlanta or different players? You know, we had talked about, you know, when you lose Greg Olsen, these other guys step up. Are there some of these fringe elemental players that pop up into your mind now when they face Atlanta? And maybe even a step deeper, does this affect Atlanta's offense in any sense if the defense is just, you know, getting run over every series?
Oh, this is getting too deep for me on a Thursday. No, seriously, I wasn't that high on the Atlanta defense to begin with. Obviously, these injuries hurt. They hurt badly. But, you know, again, next man up, will they be at the same caliber of level of play as both Neal and Jones? No, they won't, but this is the NFL. You're generally more than competent to be playing to begin with. And they'll take a look at the free agent market because there's, you know, the safety position has been one that was not really aggressively attacked during the free agent market. There's still a handful of players sitting out there that they could bring in and rather quickly get them acclimated to where they need to be. Offensively now, it puts more pressure on Atlanta to score. And unfortunately, this offense has been so bland and so predictable in the last year plus. Matt Ryan's production has suffered because of it. You know, there's zero reason Julio Jones isn't catching 10 plus touchdown passes a year. Zero reason.
But that even predates this offensive version. Oh, that goes way. That's like his entire career at this point.
It does. But if you were a better offensive coordinator, you would find ways to him the ball in the red zone. We see them try. It just hasn't materialized because the defense knows that's what's going to happen. So I just think Atlanta really needs to take a step back and adjust what they're doing offensively, because I think right now they're clicking at maybe 40-45% of what their potential could be.
Taking a look specifically, week two, some names here. Let's try to run through them really fast. Some specific yes or no start sit type situations. I mean, if any situation you feel warrants a little extra attention, you'll feel free, but Larry Fitzgerald against that, you know, vaunted Los Angeles Rams defense.
Sit.
I agree. I don't want anything to do with him. I didn't draft him this year. Randall Cobb versus the Vikings.
I'm going to be in the minority here, but I think you play Cobb this week. He's the guy that moves around a ton for Green Bay. Obviously, we had the big game last week. The rapport with Rodgers is there. He's healthy right now. I think this is a guy that's going to catch 7-8 passes. They're not going to be big yardage. He's good for a PPR day, not for a standard scoring.
I'm intrigued. I mean, obviously the Aaron Rodgers situation will play a role. Cobb probably gains from Rodgers being gimpy because he's not as likely to be able to wing it down the field, have to get rid of the ball quicker. I was really intrigued that last week they played Cobb exclusively out of the slot. So that has to favor Cobb. So he's definitely a start for me. Devin Funchess against those, you know, banged up Atlanta Falcons defenders that we mentioned, personally starting all day long and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, he's a play this week.
Does the scoring system matter?
No.
I agree. I think he gets in the end zone probably 80 yards, maybe 7 or 8 receptions for sure. An interesting one, you know, sticking with that same matchup on the other side of the coin, Mohamed Sanu.
Nah, again, it's boring. Sanu's one of those guys that even though he's got decent history here, he's just a guy. If you're rolling him in your top three receivers, it almost feels like you've already given up on the season.
Well, you know, if you start four receivers, I can understand it possibly. He does have good history, as you mentioned. There's just so much defensive attention paid to stopping Julio Jones that, you know, at some point you have to at least give some respect to Sanu. And he showed up last week, and, you know, first-round rookie Calvin Ridley did not. So I still want to give Sanu a nod here. If I'm really desperate, PPR, flex range, I absolutely would put him in my lineup.
They need to get Ridley involved is what they need to do.
They do, but I don't think he's quite ready just yet. So this one pains me, but Delanie Walker lost for the season. Tight end Jonnu Smith for the Titans against the Houston Texans. What say you?
I say sit.
I have to agree. I don't want to take a chance, even, you know, even if you're one of these owners who lost Greg Olsen and you lost Walker, and maybe you were disappointed by Trey Burton or some of these other guys who didn't quite have the involvement you expected in week one, there's still plenty of season left to find out what Jonnu Smith is. And I'm not taking, you know, potentially a big hit in week two when I can find a little bit safer option out there. Brandon Marshall versus the Chicago Bears.
I'm playing him. He's, you know, there's still a chip on the shoulder there from his time in Chicago and them getting rid of him. I think he scores this week.
I can see it. He looked pretty good. I thought he looked pretty good in the, you know, late preseason, looked pretty good in week one. Seems like he's a little leaner. Maybe that'll help him stay healthier. And obviously, no Doug Baldwin makes a huge difference. They, you know, they have to get the ball into somebody's hands. And I think Marshall's probably, you know, best suited to be that red zone weapon for this offense that doesn't even really have, you know, anyone else to speak of at this point. So, and then finally, you know, the Browns look a little bit better last week. They didn't lose, so that's a win if you're the Browns, right? So the Saints looked horrendous on defense after appearing to be on the way to having a championship caliber defense last year. Is there anyone on that Cleveland Browns offense you're willing to start against the Saints?
Hey, this isn't your daddy's Browns team anymore, man. There's lots of plays here, I think. Starting with Josh Gordon and Jarvis Landry. Gordon's going to see more reps this week. He's going to start. Looks like should be full systems go. If Tyrod Taylor can hit the broadside of a barn more often than the 40% he seems to be firing at right now, that could be a good thing. Tyrod can get the ball deep. I think he can at least actually flirt with two quarterback leagues as a starting option this week, too. Carlos Hyde is no worse than a flex play, and David Njoku should break 50 yards this week, too.
So if I'm reading between the lines, you think that the Saints probably won't be all that much better on defense, or are you looking at it more of a Cleveland has to play from behind the whole day?
I think Cleveland's going to be playing from behind quite a bit. But the Saints defense, I think we're digging out the brown paper bags again for some reason.
All right. And then finally, are there any, you know, any deep flyer players we haven't touched on maybe that you'd like to discuss that we should, you know, inform the listeners about?
I hate to rely on that pathetic Dallas Cowboys passing game, but I think if you're desperate due to injuries, Cole Beasley is an interesting option, especially in PPR. He could sneak one into the end zone as well. Due to injury, Dante Pettis in San Fran versus that rather weak Detroit defense we spoke on earlier. And I also touched on Ryan Grant. This is a guy that's probably on many free agent waiver wires still. He's not going to be a big touchdown guy, but I think in PPR leagues, he's going to be good for close to double-digit points every week as his floor.
Oh, I absolutely like all three of those guys. And, you know, my one guy that you didn't mention sticking with San Fran Lions game would have to be Matt Breida. You know, he's finally, back on track here, and I think he could have a pretty decent PPR day against the Lions defense that looks like it's still trying to find its way from a number of angles.
Yeah, I do Alfred Morris on that combination of the backfield over Breida, but I see where you're headed.
All right. Well, Ryan, it's been fun. Looking forward to more of this throughout the regular season. Is there anything that our listeners can learn from checking out thehuddle.com?
Absolutely. If you want to win your football league, head to thehuddle.com. Use the code PODCAST18. You can customize league scoring specifically to your league. We give you all the waiver wire pickups, sleepers, busts, and rankings you need to dominate your competition every week of the season. Again, that's PODCAST18. Get $10 off the regular season price.
Excellent. And it's still going right through the regular season. There's so much information over at the Huddle, and you have direct access to all of our staff. If you have any questions or need any personal attention, there's always somebody willing to give you that extra helping hand. So, well, Ryan, I greatly appreciate it. He's Ryan Bonini. Where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Bonini, all one word, RyanBonini.
Excellent, people. All right, now you know who to harass with your starting lineup questions for week two.
And do the opposite of whatever I say. You know, that usually works out well.
He isn't wrong. I'm Corey Bonini. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.